Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. It's Monday evening again, and Edwin is back for yet another rant. Hello, Edwin. Fun times, fun times, fun times. The sky's falling in. Well, no, maybe not. Who knows?
Who knows, man? Who knows? According to good old Tom, who knows? It's all I can say, Martin, is hold my beer and hold on to your hat because the real estate arena is getting very, very interesting. It's going to be the most interesting part for me, Martin, is the fact that the real estate agents now really, really have to work for the crust, right? Because that's really the message that Tom's put out. I don't see it in, he talks about, people have got their hands in the pockets and everything else. And I like, but the biggest message there from the scenario that he talks about in his latest video, his latest rant that's doing the rounds, the fact that there were six auctions. Can you believe it, Martin? Six auctions, six lambs to the slaughter, to the point where he had no, as he says it, he had no bidders. He had not even anybody that registered for the auction. I mean, that's farcical. That you got to ask yourself the question, what the hell were they thinking? You've got no registered bidders a day before the auction, a week before the auction, you've got no interest, and you go ahead with it. I mean, you got to have rocks in your head, right? I mean, this is why you and I have been saying that the auction, the glitter's come off the auction marketing campaigns, unless it's something exceptional, unless it's a situation where you have to sell, where you must sell, for legal reasons, for other reasons, deceased estates, whatever the case may be. Like, I mean, that's the only real reason why you go and go down the pathway of an auction campaign. Other than that, Martin, I mean, the glamour, the glitter, the gloss has just come off auction marketing campaign. That's a real story. Not the fact that people didn't even want to come out and get a bargain. So if you've got a property for sale at $1.5 million, right, and I went in there and I bid at 900. Was he going to drop the hammer? Of course not. I mean, get real, seriously.
Yeah, there's a bit of myopic thinking, I think, around. But just on Tom, so this one, I've seen quiet markets, but today it's really silent. I auctioned to more agents than buyers, and in one case, even the vendor didn't show up. So that was the sort of the start of it. And then he came and said, to everyone in the property industry, don't mistake this season for your future. This season is hard, but it won't last forever. Hang on in there. Better days are coming. And he talks about mortgage brokers and conveyancers and photographers and videographers and stylists. They're all hanging out for a change in the weather. And then, of course, he was on Channel 9 this morning. Yes, buyers are hesitating, sellers are holding back, and volumes have collapsed. But for people upgrading, falling prices can create a genuine opportunity. Your home may be worth less, but the property you're buying may have fallen even further. After 40 years in real estate, I know this. Markets move in seasons, and this seasons will pass. So there you go. I have to say, Edwin, that your point that you've just made as to why you would not actually ever go to auction now is actually the real story, right? But it's not the story that this is being reported anywhere else at all. And so you're still getting all of this, the auction clearance rates are down, et cetera, et cetera. And I was fascinated, I don't know whether you saw this, but in the AFR, they started their little piece on auction clearance rates with an unlivable Melbourne home smashing the reserve by $400,000 in a weak market, despite, of course, the fact that the clearance rates were significantly down again and the true clearance very, very low. But it's not really the story, is it? It is not the critical story. And so, I understand that people have a job to do. And I understand that many people in the agencies around the country are struggling. Although there's the odd agent doing quite well. This one here won $1 million lawsuit, so maybe that's the answer. So maybe you shouldn't just worry about selling property. Maybe you should try taking your competitor to court. I don't know. But look, there's a much more fundamental issue here than I think is being recognised.
I think, right. The first one is, I'm old enough to remember that in 2024, Panos was telling everybody to sell, because if they didn't sell by February 2025, it was going to be the end of the world for them, right? And at that time, if you recall, he was citing that he only sold 3 in 12 auctions beforehand, and before that, it was 2 in 10 auctions. So I mean, it was really, really mixed message. So this is where we've got to understand the fact that he is navigating through certain markets of Sydney, in certain areas of Sydney, and with certain types of properties, right? And so you've just got to be careful when you put these things across. So is it better to have sold 3 in 12 or 2 in 10 or none in 6? I mean, where is it? All that tells me is that the auction strategy, the auction marketing campaign, unless you're really on the ball and unless you really know what you're doing as a selling agent, stay away from it. Stay away from agents that just push that and they don't know how to manage it, because you are going to come unstuck. You are going to be the next. You're going to be the next bunny to get cooked, to get roasted, and it's going to cost you. It is going to cost you dearly. Look, the market, in my second point, right, and I told one of our followers that I was going to share this tonight, and as I shared with him on the phone this afternoon, look, what really happened? I'll paint you the real picture of what really happened in the western region of Sydney, where Tom had these 6 auctions and they all failed, right, from start to finish. This is the same story for all 6. So you got a nice, a pretty lass goes into to bid for the custom or bid for the business from your elderly Lebanese gentleman, and he's fixated on the lass, not fixated on what on the market, what's really happening. So she goes out all out talking the market and this and everything, but and then she says, but what we're going to do is, I believe your property is worth 1.5. So he's mesmerized by the double D delusionment, right? Because she's just stroked his ego, right? He's just masturbated his ego. And he goes, that's it, I'm going out, 1.5, right? That's it. But, and then a seasoned veteran, lass or a bloke comes in, and a seasoned veteran, right, and says, Joe, your property's, in the good days, in the good times, we could probably get you 1.35, right? But the market's not so good. It's a hard gig. Yes, I know you want a solid as a duplex site, and you've been holding on to it because you want to capitalize on the fact that now the council's given you approval for it to become a duplex site. But Joe, the market is what it is. We're at 1.35. So Joe says, I'm going with double D, right? I'm going with double D. I'm in. And of course, what's going to happen? Reality hits during the marketing campaign, and the young lad that wants to make a name for himself or for herself, they don't want to retreat. They're hopeful. They're praying. They're 5 Hail Marys, 10 Our Fathers every night, so that the would-be buyer is going to come in from the North Shore, doesn't know, it's going to speculate on the market and it's going to drop 1.5. I mean, that's your general scenario. People are not listening to reality. They're listening to the spin. They get conned by the looks of the agent, and they get mesmerized by the looks of the agent, and they get mesmerized and conned by the flowery words, those whispers of love of 1.5, 1.6 when the properties are only worth 1.35. I mean, that's the reality, Martin. That's my reality. I come across it in the Western suburbs. I come across it in the North Shore. Come across it in the Eastern suburbs. That's how you buy your listing. That's how you then you start conditioning. But a lot of the young people don't know how to. They don't have the notches on their belt just yet to be able to condition or crunch the vendors until they have auction. And of course, this is the scenario that you're going to get, because to think that in this current marketplace, at the price points of these properties that Panels' auction over the weekend would be on average about 1.4, 1.5 million, what they're hoping and praying that somebody's going to come in on the day of the auction, on the 11th hour or half an hour before the auction starts, kicks off, is going to register, is going to sign up, is going to bid, and they're going to sell it. I mean, they've got rocks in their head. It's time that the real estate industry woke up and started really working for their crust. Simple as that.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's really important at this time. I mean, I made a show yesterday called The Great Australian Property Bust for How Long, which I think is a really important question, right? Because there's quite a lot of negativity out there at the moment, as we'll see. But I want to make the point, tomorrow I've got Leith Van Onselen coming on for my live show. And we're going to look at some of the economic drivers to this, because there are a number of different economic drivers that potentially are driving things a little bit awry. Of course, it's not helped by all of the various media pieces. And for example, this one, housing pain hits blue chip suburbs. And this is about double digit price falls recorded in Australia's two largest capital cities as mortgage belt suburbs remain resilient. And they're talking here about declines in Manly and Sorrento in Melbourne. This is based on recent PropTrack data. So there's a lot of downward arrows in this, and of course that spooks people. And then of course on the other hand, there's talk about regions where house prices rose, but actually now they're perhaps sliding a little. The price of a typical house in the regions fell by 0.6%, $5,000. In the 3 months to June, according to Domain. But it's interesting that the idea that KPMG's been talking about is that Sydney's price growth has rippled beyond Sydney into regional New South Wales. But of course, it would put some places like Broken Hill, for example, where there's been a bit of an Armidale and Inverell. Well, it's okay, but if you're based in Sydney or around Sydney, not much help. And then, of course, this one here was just talking about the fact that in some areas, the truth is that there are other suburbs just down the road where values are quite different. So this was an article highlighting, for example, in around Melbourne, you can look at suburbs that are potentially undervalued compared with near neighbours. And it's interesting, I did a show specifically on the Central Coast, because that's a really good example of exactly the same, where you can see quite diverse property prices in relatively close suburbs. And it really comes back to this wonderful point that we continue to make again and again, that you can't take these averages. These averages tell you absolutely nothing. You have to know the local market. You have to be able to actually get into the mind of the prospective purchasers and potential sellers in those areas. There are many sellers who are actually still aspiring at a much higher price point, because that's what the agents told them, despite the fact the reality hasn't yet dawned. But the other thing we should highlight, I think that, and I made this show yesterday, I highlighted this as well, that, we've got pressures on households. So, for example, the household monthly budget is definitely a problem for many people. I see that in my stress data. We've got the expectation of potentially a rate increase following the strong employment data. I made a show on that, where the case there actually is being made for significant hikes rather than cuts and higher interest rates. And of course, the CPI data that's coming out this week is probably going to be higher than the RBA expectation. In fact, Westpac has forecast that the monthly trimmed mean inflation will be 0.4% for the month, with an annual pace of 3.7%, which is up from 3.6%. And that means that there's a chance of a rate hike. So I think that's worth, and by the way, just on the inflation, Christopher Joy's recent article made the point that there's a strong link between strong inflation and also the massive investments in AI, because that funding has to come from somewhere. So funding is competing for different purposes, and that's going to put more upward pressure. Why bond yields are so high. And then, of course, credit is down. So again, I made a show earlier on about the fact that there's a bit of a credit drought at the moment, as well as some of the broader issues about recessions and oil prices. And of course, we're also losing the last of the subsidies on oil at the moment. So that's dialing off, despite the fact oil prices are still pretty high, although there's been no fighting for at least 2 days. So who knows where that's going to come. So look, the point of this, all of this, is to say there's a bunch of uncertainties out there, but you have to actually think about, on the ground, what are the properties, what are the prospective purchasers thinking about, what are the prospective buyers thinking about? You have to go granular. You can't just take these macro pictures and sort of smear it across. And I get really frustrated with so many of these property so-called analysts that have no idea about real property markets at all.
This is the point that we've been making, that we continue to make on a regular basis, and we've been making it for a very, very long time. So, but when you start, when you also start looking back at their at the charts and at the graphs and at the figures and the and the to you know, the quarterly reverse trends in property values or the projected 12-month trends and everything, you know, and as you said, it's an in globo. It's a you know, they paint all of Sydney with one brush, or all the markets with one brush, and then you've got your national figures as well. You know, so you've got a lot of emotion. You've got a lot of balls are play, you know, many balls are being juggled, but I'm yet to see, as I reached out to Lou Christopher last week, and I said, man, are you seeing any mortgagee sales? You know, are you picking up any of that data? We know that there's a lot of stress. We know that for a fact. There's a lot of stress. We've known that for a very long time, mm-hmm. And yet, whilst the nation has been all the young people that are trying to get into the market, or anybody that's trying to get into the property market, or upsides or downsides or whatever, you know, it's been very, very stressful, and there's been a lot of stress for those that are holding on to mortgages as well, especially the ones coming up to retirement and having to retire with a big noose around their necks, which is really a shame that they end up in that position. So, but we know that for a fact, but we haven't yet seen the real, like, we haven't seen any evidence of mortgagee sales, mortgagee in possession, to really say that the market is really tanking, or to say that the market is really on on its knees. A lot of the time, most of this is really a lot of noise. Yeah. Okay. So what I feel we've got, as I've been saying, is that we've got a correction, right? We've got a correction. And the ones that are whinging and bitching and carrying on the most and kicking and screaming the most is, unfortunately, my industry, the real estate industry. Because most of the people that are in that industry don't know what the hell to do, because they don't know. They've never been in this. You could say, for me, it's my fourth time around. I've gone through, you know, three, four cycles, going into the fourth one. I've seen it all. But you learn to navigate through this. This is what we used to call 20 years ago, we used to call normal times. This is where you either make it or you break. This is where you either continue in the industry or you move on. You go back to doing whatever else you feel that you came from or whatever. So this is something that and you really have to work for your crust, right? So as you say, Martin, with all the indicators out there, right, there are some fundamental positions or fundamental indicators that are very fundamental to the property landscape as well. Now, how soon they come onto the arena, and how soon the effect of these that I'm about to share are going to materialize and going to start affecting the market once again, it's anybody's guess, right? But one of them is basically the government has really, Treasury, has been warned that its housing targets were unachievable. And we're talking thousands of homes. We're not talking 10 or 100 or 1,000. We're talking the numbers in the tens of thousands. So that are going to have major impact on the rental market. But it's going to have major impact on that side of the fence on that arena. And then you've got the now we're finding out as Cameron Kusha put out in his ex post earlier today, that it's not actually 4,000 self-managed super fund loans that were written last year, but it was actually closer to 16,000. That's a lot of housing. That is a lot of housing that is not going to come onto the rental market, onto the property arena to house renters. So your rentals are only going to increase. So if your rentals increase and your dwellings decrease, sooner or later, there's going to be a correction upward because the rentals are going to be favorable again on established dwellings. Some people will say, "Oh yeah, but if you buy an established dwelling, what do you call it? You can't negatively gear it." Yeah, I get that. But most of the people, most of the investors that buy established dwellings don't buy established dwellings to negatively gear. They buy it because of the rental return, the yield, and the capital, growth, 5, 10, 15, 20 years. So what we've got on the market at the moment is a lot of those properties that many investors have held for decades, for 30, 40 decades. There is a suburb in Sydney that when it was first when the subdivision happened, Glenwood, when the first subdivision happened, it was the majority. It was investor owned. It was investment dwellings, and a lot of investors gravitated towards it, and a lot of the investors held onto them. So before the budget, there were in that suburb there were twenty-two properties on the market for sale before the budget. Post-budget, now there's something like 46 properties on the market for sale, and most of them are investors. So, but the thing when you look at when people bought those investments back then, 25, 30 years ago, they bought them at $500,000, $450,000, and now they're selling at 1.5, 1.6, 1.8. So why wouldn't you get out if you know that the future is going to look bleak? You pull out now because of the new regulations around the future investment and so forth. You bail out now. You've made your money. And that's what we've got. That's why the numbers were have been inflated. But then sooner than now, we're seeing a retreat, and we can look at the auction numbers that are coming up for this weekend. I mean, they're absolutely dismal. But now we've got a retreat in properties going to Auckland, and I believe that soon, opposing Louis Christopher's view that he feels that over the next 2, 3 weeks, there's going to be an absolute surge in property listings for sale in the Sydney market. I don't believe so. I think people have now learning the lesson that unless you really have to sell, there's no need to sell. So going back to previous years, if you don't have to sell to 2024, 2025, if you don't really need to sell, why sell? Because, and if you sell, where do you go? Because you're still not, the dwellings aren't there. Some say, oh, you sell now because then you can buy, you're also buying a downward market. I mean, it's, horses for courses, right? So these are dynamics, and these are, actual numbers and facts that are going to come into play. So when you take the emotion aside and you start looking at numbers and you start looking at facts and you start looking at even the mainstream media and your totalities and your price finders and everything else, doing their analysis and doing the quarterly reviews as to the falls, well, properties really haven't, the market really hasn't fallen by that much over the last quarter in comparison to what everybody's talking about, in comparison to Panos's commentary that that was he's seen or heard or been told that in the West properties have fallen by 20%. Bullshit. I'm calling bullshit. Tell me which one. Show me. And I'll call bullshit on it. I'll tell you what it is. It's Joe that thinks he's sitting on a prime piece of real estate or as a development site that he could once get $1.5, $1.7 million for it. And now nobody wants to give him more than 1.3 or the real value of it. It's always 1.3. But because Joe's being Joe, he wants 1.5 in his hand because that's the nature of that beast. Right. And now that because nobody's going to give him 1.3, the true value, all of a sudden the market's fallen 20%. So who's right and who's wrong? Am I right or is a Panos right or am I wrong? And unless you've got the actual properties in front of you and we can analyze it, we can see what was going on, you can look at the camera, we're not really going to know. Right. So it's whoever tells the story, whoever spins it a lot better, right? And whether you and I, whether I spin it on, and I'm being frank here, whether I spin it on the Monday evening property rants with Martin North or whether Tom spins it on, today, on, Good Morning Australia, whatever program he does. I mean, it's all really, how that story's told. But what you and I have, to back out a lot of our arguments is facts and figures. And that's the biggest difference with a lot of the mainstream commentary and a lot of the mainstream so-called property commentators that are out there.
Yeah, I think that's right. I do think that facts and figures and analysis and all of those things really helps. And, my postcode level dives that I do, I think are very relevant here at the moment because it just shows you, when I looked at the Central Coast, actually suburb by suburb, there are some quite significant differences across different suburbs and different drivers. In some suburbs, they're not building anything. In other suburbs, there's a lot of stuff being built, and there's a different demand and a different supply and a different price point and a different set of other external risks. All of those things are there. The other interesting observation I'd make, and I just want to come back to this particular point, the Bank of Mum and Dad. I've been looking at the Bank of Mum and Dad recently, and one of the biggest changes is that the Bank of Mum and Dad has put the shutters down. There are now less people willing to help their kids buy. And this little article here, which is talking about the mistakes from the Bank of Mum and Dad that could put parents' retirement plans at risk. I've been talking about this for a long, long time. Can you give too much help if you help with debt or if you trigger potential legal woes? And it's basically a little quote here. It's a mistake to assume that your children will think better of you if you help them. And so there is a little bit of a sense that maybe people are pulling back from this. And actually, I'm seeing this as quite a significant factor too when I come to those people who are thinking of buying. Look, the fact is, affordability is still shot. Whatever house prices, it's still really a struggle for a lot of new people trying to get into the market, even with a 5% deposit from the government. And with the prospect of prices coming back, the equity scare is there too. But the Bank of Mum and Dad was a very significant factor. In some places, they were providing well over $100,000 into the pot to allow somebody to get into the market. Well, if those were removed as well, that's going to be another factor. Not universally, of course, because not that necessarily every postcode is infected the same way, but I think some could be affected by that. So I think that's worth thinking about. And then, of course, you've got on the construction side, your point about lack of supply is absolutely on point because the cost of construction still are rising relative to the market price at the moment, and people are trying to sort of square that circle. And of course, then you have the ongoing stories of, the Baffler, for example, story and the risks there that still seem to be there. A spokesperson declined to comment if the developer had attempted to tap insolvency advisors. to enter safe harbor arrangements. Now, look, I don't know what the story there is true, but the truth of the matter is that we have a number of construction firms under huge pressure at the moment. The costs of borrowing continue to rise. The risks are rising. The cost of materials are rising. And therefore, the price point for new properties are not coming back. So I'm not sure how this gets squared ultimately, but again, I think it comes back to our critical point. You can't just take the top line aggregate average and try and make sense of it because it tells you zero. You can't just take the top line auction clearance rate as anything meaningful. It tells you zero. What you have to do is you have to really understand the local markets and the local dynamics and all of those things. Because if you don't, then it's going to be pretty scary. But actually, Edwin, you've seen something even more scary.
Well, Martin, that's the thing. Look, the property market is scary for a lot of people. It scares a lot of people, and people are confused by it. But look, I think there's a lot more happening out there beyond the property arena that's even scarier, right? And that's last week, a couple of OpenAI agents or something escaped the sandbox, escaped jail, escaped the quarantine. And next thing you know, that was the first thing I woke up to reading that about this, and they attacked some unbeknownst little another facility, smiley face or something or other, and poor things, they got overcome by these two OpenAI agents. Now, but the scarier thing is then you got these. This all-terrain robots, all they need. I mean, you can just picture a semi-automatic rifle on top of it, and it could go anywhere. If you watch the video, I mean, this thing is absolutely phenomenal, and it goes real. So there is really no escaping, Martin. That to me is scary, and this property market, this current is distracting us from what's around the corner, from all this AI stuff that's happening out there, and really, it's deflecting the reality. And then you've got on top of that, the Daily Telegraph putting out a piece saying that. Yeah, we've become the dumping ground of EVs, and what a lot of people don't know here, which the WeChat charters have told us, and Dusty and Evan have been on the ball with this, and that is that a lot of these there's a lot of companies in China that come and go, like a lot of the building companies here in Australia. They come and go, and yet we're importing these EVs from cheap imports from China sooner than later you're going to find out that you can't even get the bloody thing serviced. Not to mention the fact, and notwithstanding the fact that you don't know what they're recording, right? You know what they're recording, even the BYDs, even the let's say the most famous ones that come out from China. You don't know what they're recording. I'm not only talking about recording inside as you're driving the bloody thing, but also recording as you're driving around the roads, as you're driving around your neighborhoods. I can bet your bottom dollar that there's a lot of footage going back to servers in China, and the mapping out where I live and where Dusty and I live, and they're going to come and get us sooner than later, because that's why I'm not driving in a BYD anywhere near my place.
Well,
that's scary, Martin.
Certainly the telemetry on those vehicles is quite interesting, and maybe actually there's a bit of a deal to be done between those cars that can send all this material and information and the property portals. Maybe you could actually create a whole new ball game, right, where they're actually getting even more information of what's going on in the local area. I don't know, but look, this is a bit of a scary prospect. But I actually think the AI story, as I highlighted earlier on, is going to put another lever on inflation higher simply because of the funding. And I don't know whether that OpenAI breaking out of the sandbox was purely done for effect. In other words, were they actually, you know, because there are big players wanting to say ours is better than yours, sort of thing, or whether it actually really was as serious as some people are suggesting in terms of actually the agents worked its way around and managed to get out and, as you say, got into another system and got some code to try and solve a particular problem. The checks and balances and the controls on AI is a big question. The amount of funding going into AI is a huge question. And the legacy of all of this on ordinary people has yet to be, I think, understood, both in terms of the financial impact through the financial markets, but also more broadly in terms of jobs or no jobs and what it all means. So, yeah, there's a lot to be scared about there. And I do think that all this fixation on the minutiae of property price movements, you know, 3.3% down in Sydney over the last quarter or whatever the domain number came out, it's really a matter of perspective, isn't it? But talking about perspective, if you want to see something really scary, right, what you should do, Edwin, is you should go down under.
And this is the scary thing in all these in these current market conditions, and also different market conditions, right? Where property prices are going up as well. It's the same thing. It's something that should scare the bejeebies out of people. So the video that you're just about to play is actually footage of the in the subfloor area of a property, and if you can see there the blue green pieces of timber there, they're actually that's just treated pine, right? And that piece there, that 45 piece of timber there, 4B2, is acting as a bearer, holding up about four joists coming across. You can see in the background, and that's another just treated pine there, 90 by 45, two pieces there, and they're joined in the middle on top of that pier. But these piers are just as we say in the industry, they're on the piss. Yeah, they're about to fall over. They're leaning so much they're about to fall over. There's not much holding the bearer that was next to that first piece of timber there, and it was only holding on by about 20 millimeters or so. So it is scary stuff. So this is like I said, no matter what market, but more so now in the current market conditions, where you want to. I shouldn't say that you should be doing more of it. You should be doing all that you can to do in due diligence, because this is just added to have the subfloor area and to fix the piers and further down, further to the back, you've got your engaged piers as well that are holding the bearers there. I mean, this is in the inner west of Sydney. It's very difficult to get under, and we've estimated that there's anywhere between $250,000 and $300,000 worth of rectification work. Now, what happened? They relied on the building inspection report that was provided by the agent, and all it said there was, we advise you that you should get further advice. and that was it. In one photo, and you didn't have to go too far under the house to see all this that our viewers are seeing on the video that one of our fellows took.
Yeah, and it's interesting. How old do you think that property was?
The properties, the property was built in the 20s, 30s. Mm. So it's one of it's semi-detached, and you've got the double brick walls coming down all the way to the ground. So it's got a lot of other issues as well, rising damp. But this just adds a lot more issues and makes everything a lot more difficult. And the fact that you can only crawl under there for say to about one third of the probably the rest you just can't crawl in. You really can't. So you really got to lift the floor from the inside in order to rebuild the piers. You need to rectify the engaged piers around the perimeter of the house, and then you basically start from scratch. So the people have to move out for a minimum 3 months. It'll be 3 to 6 months, depending on the weather.
Yeah, and this goes back to this thing we keep coming back to. The survey that is attached to the property by the agent as part of the marketing campaign will tell you close to zero about the real state of play in the property. Whereas if you get your own survey done, you'll have a much better level of insight as to what the property is really about, and things like underfloor, and things like in the roof void, and things like the damp, and all of those things. As we've said on so many occasions, Edwin, not taking enough time to do the due diligence on the way in to buy a property, particularly now, is going to cost you an arm and a leg or two. And yet, even now, there are still many people who are making property decisions without getting that done. I can't understand why they do it. Maybe they just trust what the agent tells them. Maybe they just trust that very Mickey Mouse, caveated survey that's done as part of the marketing campaign. You must do your own due diligence. It's so critical.
This is going to hurt a lot of people, right? And it's going to hurt a lot more because of the age of the dwellings that are predominantly in the West, and many parts of the North Shore, Upper North Shore, many parts of Sydney, the eastern suburbs. I guess in a good way, the fact that there's not going to be as many properties going to market moving forward via the auction campaign, where the agents put a lot of pressure on buyers, and the campaigns are shortened to create that urgency and create that competition. It's a good thing that many owners are going to be choosing not to take that risk. Unless they've got a lot of people coming in to the open house, unless it's something that a lot of people are gravitating towards for one reason or another, position, location, size of the property. What I see a lot of properties in the inner west that attract a lot of attention are ones that have got garages. The majority don't have garages. They're parking on the street, and to park on the streets, it's very, very difficult to even have one car, let alone some families that have two cars or three. So I guess that moving forward for the near future is a good thing that people are going to have more time to do a bit more due diligence than they would have otherwise done. The sad thing about it is people are still believing in what the selling agents are telling them, and look, from a lot of countries, from Asia particularly, real estate agents in Asia act as buyers' advocates as well as vendors' advocates at the same time. It's a really, really interesting scenario there. When I was spent the time in Hong Kong and in Singapore and in China and talking to the real estate agents there, it was really fascinating the way they operate. And they think that a lot of the people from the Asian communities, not just from China but from other Asian countries, that is why they're so trusting of the selling agent, because they think that they're acting on their behalf as well, without having to pay them any money, and they fall for it. But it's not only just the Asian community; it's a lot of other communities and young people that are desperate to get a house, and that's the thing. It's that desperation. But I guess now that the market slowed down a bit, people have got a bit more time, and they should think a little bit longer before they proceed. And by all means, get your own surveys, get your own building pest inspection reports.
Yeah, very, very important as always. And it's an insurance, peace of mind, but also it can save you, a lot of money. down the track, because this remedial work that so many people walk into without really understanding what they're walking into can really be very, very expensive over a long period of time. Now, let's just talk briefly about price scenarios, Edwin, before we move on and look at the numbers. Because, of course, the latest Catality data showed that Sydney and Melbourne over the last quarter has dropped back a little bit. But it's interesting that Cameron Kushner, did a bit of work, in fact, got quite a lot of coverage on this particular set of charts, which is quite interesting because it shows you the current fall from the last peak and when the peak was. And then it shows you where you'd get back to in terms of time if values continued to fall. And the one that stands out for me is Melbourne, right? So if there was, horror of horrors, a 30% fall in Melbourne prices, it would take you all the way back to August 2015. Now, of course, there is a bit of a debate at the moment about the government in Melbourne and whether we're going to have a new leader there before the election or not. But it shows you, I think, that Melbourne is a standard. But what's your take on this chart?
It's an interesting chart, but you can also, again, a lot of these numbers are the broad numbers, right? They're painting all of Sydney with the same brush. You could, you know, parts of from the 5% guarantee that of 2025 that the government dished out, we saw markets in the western suburbs climb 20%, 25% within a couple of months. But as an overall chart, it's interesting. It really, really is interesting when you're looking at Sydney, we 10% pulls us back to 2023, but yet at the same time, he's got a 15% drop. We're still at 2023 prices. So there's some anomalies in there overlapping. But for me, Martin, as I said, if you look at the combined capital cities, if we went back by 10% across the board, across the spectrum, for me, my marker is at 10%, the economy is in a world of shit. Because as I've been saying, and as you and I know that I've been aware for a very, very long time, and that a lot of small businesses, SMEs, operators, are being funded by the equity in their homes, and when you start, when the banks, that the trigger for many banks, for the majority of the banks, is that 10%. They'll start to panic at 10%. And the fact that their properties are cross-collateralized with the business ventures is where they've got a better chance or a quicker opportunity to put them into receivership, through the commercial loan, which is cross-collateralized with the residential property. That is when we may well see a lot of mortgagee in possession sales on the main portals. Not because your regular homeowners are suffering, because they've got a different pathway that they can choose. They can go to the bank and under the Act of 2010, it's very, very difficult for the banks to foreclose on your typical mum and dad scenario. They've basically got to give them every which way and means to, not to foreclose or not to close the books on them, and give them more leeway, more time to pay off, catch up with the repayments, whatever the case may be, or restructure it. But when you've got your property cross collateralized with your principal, with your business, your small manufacturing plant, your warehouse, whatever the case may be, that is when the banks will move in. And for me, that 10% is the trigger.
Yeah, and it's interesting, there was some discussion over the weekend about could prices fall 20% and what would happen if they did. The other interesting observation is that would hit the banks very, very hard because, of course, so much of bank lending is actually into the mortgage books. It's their big building societies. And in fact, if that was to happen, they would be in a world of pain too. So it becomes a question in my mind. Well, you know, the question is, well, how long will property prices go sideways or down? It becomes, how long will the government not act to solve that problem, right? Because they can't afford, I don't think they can afford to let prices drift down that far before the broader economic consequences and financial stability risks and issues come to the surface. And at the moment, they're sort of, I think, content to sort of say nothing and do nothing. I mean, it was interesting that there was no public debate over the last 3 days of the Labour conference on the housing situation at all, other than there was a recognition that they probably weren't going to meet their targets. But at what point will they have to come back in and throw more money at first-time buyers, throw more money at the construction sector, throw more money, taxpayer money, of course, at more incentives to try and save the market? I don't know when it is, but it does actually, for me, become the critical determinant point as to how long this journey is, whether it's a few weeks or whether it's a few months or, as you say, a few years, who knows? But I think that's, for me, the critical question.
And that's something that then it comes back to when you bought, you know, how you bought, why you bought, and you know, that's going to become very, very critical. Yeah. I can tell you now, the dustiest property in the mountains, looking at the chart, say February, March, April 2021, was the purchase. But from April 2021, Dusty's home in the mountains has gone up 120%.
That's right.
So
real paper money, right? So, you know, it's a theoretical, but that's the point. A lot of people are still sitting on very significant, paper, but sitting on equity. So that wealth effect is still somewhat intact. Now, if prices were to drop significantly, then clearly that's going to have a very negative impact on people's ability to spend, and, you know, negative wealth effect has consequences beyond. Also make another point, interesting that I saw today, there are now term deposits being offered at 6%, right? So when you think about the return on property relative to the return on, let's say, savings in the bank, that equation is shifting. And I don't think it's going to shift back anytime soon, actually, because I don't think we're going to see interest rates being cut dramatically for quite some time. What that suggests to me is that some people will actually think, well, hang on a moment, I've still got quite a lot of equity. Why don't I crystallize that equity and go into some other investment class? I think we're going to see some of that. But again, I think it all depends on what the government's going to do. And, you know, and I know, because we've been saying about this for a long, long time, the governments do tend to meddle in the property market. They do tend to stick their finger in the dike and try and stop this problem and that problem and throw money here and make more announceables there and run more committees across the road, you know. That's what they do. So I'm sure they're going to do the same again.
100%. It's a given. You can't, like I said, the trigger is it's 10% from a combined capitals because of contacts in the banks, and that will be very, very. Then we start. It's a different game out there. Then there's going to be a lot of panic. This is the thing with that, Martin, is then you really also triggered unemployment. Because once small businesses keep on shutting down, well, there's going to be more people unemployed, more people that you may be competing with one or two people now for a position in a company. Now that company no longer exists, and now there's another three or four along with you, competing for the position in the next company. And how long is that one going to be staying? I mean, and it just becomes a domino effect. And this is why This is why they can't shut the doors on immigration.
No,
This
absolutely.
is the main reason. This is why I keep on saying this is going to be played out. But when the redhead comes in, that's when we're really going to start dancing.
Well, the latest poll that's just come out suggests that actually the next government will be determined by the minority parties and by the independents, and One Nation's up there. So yeah, watch this space. Let's just quickly move to the latest listings. So looking at the Domain listings, this is based on Sydney Region First as defined by Domain, 25,281 on the 20th of July. And 25,343 on the 27th of July, so a small rise. And in fact, your chart there shows just a little peak up. And you made the point earlier on, what's going to happen from here? Are we going to see listings rising as sometimes we see into the spring, or are we going to see something different this time?
My money is on my money is on people are going to start retreating, and as I said, from the budget till you got to let the listings run for 90 days. I really feel there's going to be a retraction. People are going to pull out unless you only sell if you really have to sell. If you need to sell, you have to sell. That's when you're going to sell, and it's not a time to test the market, and that's going to potentially take a lot of properties off many markets across Sydney. Luke Christopher is of the opposite opinion. He feels that in because of Tom's recent video, he feels that there's going to be a with 100% certainty listings are about to rise within the next 2 to 3 weeks. Let's watch this space. And there's a 40% chance, according to Louis, that there'll be another rate rise. On that one, I would say that I'm of the opinion that. There won't be a. They'll just. It's going to be steady as she goes for the next. Till the end of the year, possibly. I know many people are. It's a split. It's a 50-50 split. I'm sitting on the fence on that one, and we're not going to see much happening on that because there will be a lot of pressure from the government, in my opinion. Regardless of that, the fact that people are saying that, oh, the LBO stands on bullshit. So, but let's see. Let's see. Where the how it falls on over the next 2 to 3 weeks. In 2 to 3 weeks, I think we just getting into autumn, so we'll be, we're about 5 weeks away from the beginning of spring, and we'll see what happens. But I'm still in a way hopeful. I would say not hopeful, but I'm still my little antennas tell me that we could end up with a 2021 2.1 lockdowns 2.1 where people aren't getting the numbers, aren't getting the bang for their buck that they want to get, and they will retreat. And this is where, and that is when things are going to start getting interesting, because of the new are also not going to be coming on the market. They're not going to be on the field at play. And sooner than later, people are going to realize that to replace even an old brick is costing a lot of money. I went to I needed a we needed a 1,000 bricks, which is a pallet load of bricks to do some rectification work on a fence again, in the Canterbury area, and it was the old those solid bricks. Martin, I couldn't find the bastards for less than $3.50 per brick. It was 3,500 for a pallet. We needed, and you couldn't buy less than a pallet. We only needed 500 or 600 of them, and you couldn't buy them. It was cheaper. At the end of the day, it was cheaper to knock the whole fence down. The front fence, brick fence, knock it all down and rebuild it out of commons for $1.45, and then just render it and try to to sort of blend it in with try to do something that was cheaper to do that than to just fix a third of the fence that had sort of fallen over.
Very interesting, Edwin. Yeah, the price of some of those things are huge. Let's look at the Melbourne situation. So on the 20th of July, there were 35,538 properties listed as defined by domain in the Melbourne region, of which 25,143 were houses. Go forward, 33,569 with 23,291 houses. Melbourne is still looking pretty sick.
Yeah, look, it is. But it is interesting that they've had a 1,500 or so properties, most of them being homes that have come off the market. But we did. I said that we were going to hit the 35,000 mark in winter, and we did. And now it's just sort of retreated back a bit now. But I think people are going to wait now to see what happens post the election is going to be the key. If the Labor government come back, take the helm again, Melbourne's going to be in a lot of trouble. There won't be any turning back then. The great exodus will continue well into 2027.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably right. And of course, the current disruption with regard to the leader is all part of that story. So we'll see how that plays out. Let's look at Brisbane briefly. On the 20th, 4,733 properties for sale. 4,823 a week later. So still a rise. Not massive, but still rise. And I still think the signs in the Brisbane market aren't looking very flash at the moment. The auctions, of course, very, very benign, very slow, very limited.
Yeah, look, just lost, like I said, they've lost the total confidence in the auction campaigns. It's curtains for the auction campaigns as far as I'm concerned. The shine has come off. We all see whether it's a temporary thing or if it's going to pick up again in spring. I doubt it. We're going to auction this Saturday. We've only got 252 properties that are actually still listed on domain that are going to auction that are still on queue. I wonder how many of those are not going to have any bidders. And not going to have any registered bidders. That is the $64 million question.
Absolutely.
And how many are really going to be let down?
Well, you know, that chart, I think, speaks volumes, really. You know, the volumes are way down, and I can't see any reason why that would change. I would not take a property to auction at the moment unless it was super special or it was absolutely required because of the situation, for example, a death state that needed to, that process. Because otherwise, I think you're wasting time, effort, and money for no real good return.
Yeah. Look, there are some key fundamentals for going to auction. Legal reasons, whether it be death, divorce, inheritance. Yeah, so legal reasons. Mortgagee in possession. Again, it's also legal reasons because no receiver wants to. They don't like selling properties by a private treaty because that they do it by way of auction because that is the number on the day. And if they get sued for not doing things right, which a lot of receivers do, strangely enough, they do get sued later on down the track. But there's that potential. This is one way how they cover their asses. And a unique property. And also urgency for that's they're your so unless you fall in that category, if you're just one in 10 or 24 bedroom homes in the area for sale, why the hell would you want to go to auction?
It's more expensive, less reliable, and as we've shown, the clearance rate's very low. Let's look at the rentals, just to finish this little story off. So the Sydney rentals on the 20th were 12,611. A week later, 12,512, so a small fall. And in the Melbourne market, 11,278 on the 20th, 11,263 on the 27th. Not huge supply, expensive supply, and a lot of pressure on a lot of people still in the rental market. And again, this is one of those big stories we keep talking about. We keep highlighting the pressures. it's really not getting the attention in the mainstream that it deserves.
One of the tribunals, they're booked out up until December now. So if you need to, have your matter heard as a landlord, or even as a tenant, if you need to go into a formal hearing, you're booked out between now and until the end of the year. It's only going to get worse. That's only going to, or it's going to impact the other tribunals as well, because there's not many of them. Parramatta, Penrith, Liverpool, in the city, to hear all the matters so things are getting worse. People are holding, for grim death, to not to get kicked out of the properties, because they know that if they get kicked out, they're not going to be able to rent anywhere near them where they currently live, and or even further out in they're basically going from a three bedroom into a one bedroom. And how do you support a young family on going from a three bedroom dwelling to a one bedroom, even if it's in the same area, to keep the kids in the same school? It is absolutely diabolical out there, Martin, and there's not enough coverage, there's not enough reporting about it.
No, I'm afraid not. I've had a few conversations this last week with people who are caught in very difficult situations, and it's so sad because they've done nothing wrong. They've tried to do the right thing. They've tried to rent somewhere that's going to be sustainable for their family, and then something external happens. In some cases, it's just the rent going up dramatically, or it's a change of circumstance, and suddenly they're thrown into this maelstrom of trying to work out what to do, finding it very difficult to find alternatives, and unfortunately it puts a lot of pressure on the families. So yeah, this is a really big deal. Unfortunately, it doesn't get the coverage that it deserves, but we're going to continue to talk about this on this channel because it's so critical. Well, before we end, let's just get your tip for the week, Edwin.
There are a lot of shenanigans going on out there in the property arena, but also outside of the property arena. This weekend alone, Dusty and I, we got something like five or six between us scam callers. There are so many scams floating around. It seems like the desperation, and whenever the property arena goes haywire, spurs on these people that want to glue you into all sorts of scams, promising you if you do this survey you'll get $1,000, and if you do this you'll get that, and blah blah blah. Stay alert, because there are a lot of scammers out there, and the scammers aren't necessarily just the before you bid and before you buy building inspection reports. There's a lot of other ways that you can get scammed as well. So, just stay on be alert and stay on your toes.
Very good advice, Edwin. And I think sometimes people are surprised at how innovative some of those scammers can be, and how realistic, that could be the hook as they try to find a way, whether it's an email hook or whether it's an SMS hook or whatever. So yes, you've got to actually really just double check yourself before you react. And one of the things that I find quite often is that when you actually stop and think twice, then you immediately can see that it's not legit. But if you react immediately, then there's a risk. So yeah, just count to 10 and just say, is this real? Is it not real? Unfortunately, we can't rely on other people to protect. We have to actually do our own due diligence on the way through, as with property. Edwin, thank you so much. As always, great conversation. I'll do it all again next week, and have a good week in the meantime.
You too, Martin. You take care of yourself.
Cheers. Oh.